With that, it is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Betty Lou.
Thank you. My name is Betty Lou, and I am an alcoholic, a.k.a. the vanilla lady. I've got an unusual story. Most of it is the same as the rest of you. I was the youngest of four children. My next brother to me was 8 years, my senior. They were all athletes and were perfect. And they left the house. They were all going to college when I was growing up. My mom decided when I was very young that she wanted to drink, and we are Irish Catholic, so it doesn't work out so well. She was a terrible alcoholic. I swore that I would never be my mother, ever. And I was raised pretty much on my own. My dad finally had had enough of her antics and moved out to a ranch when I was about 10, I think. So I pretty much raised my mom and had free run. Sorry, God. Sorry, Mom. Anyway, I ran amok, and I always ran with older people, so I was really mature for my age. I took care of the household. I took care of everything. I had a checkbook at 11. I could just do whatever I wanted. I went from just running with older people, and of course, I had money. And the older friends, and I had a car, even though I was 12. It wasn't mine, but it was available. And I had a gas card. So I had friends, lots of friends, older friends. And that's all I wanted was attention. And I now looking back at it, I knew that I was different. I didn't know anything about alcoholism ever, never heard it. They never did anything with my mom. They hid her. You know, back then it was like, we don't talk about that. I ran and I drank some beers. I ran with, the older crowd, and I would have a beer because it was cool. I didn't like the taste of it, and I didn't really want anything to do with it, but I did it. When I was 8, I was molested. When I was 14, the parties were at my house, and I was not real big on sex because of what had happened to me as a child. I was raped at 14 by a family friend, and it was just like I was scared to death of the world at that point. I met my husband, I was about 15, and I saw him, and he was the man of my dreams. I knew he was going to be the guy that I was going to marry, and I knew what was going to happen if I really wanted this older guy. So I learned that if I drank, it made it easier. I didn't have any guilt. I didn't have anything. So that's where my drinking career began. I used it to numb myself. I didn't drink a lot then. We had a house. I was married. I just turned 17 and had our own house. And so the parties were at our house, of course. And I did really well. I started having children at 21, had my second at 23. I wanted to be the perfect mom because I didn't have that. And I even took classes at COS on how to be parenting classes and all these child classes because I wanted to do it right. And I did do it right for a while. We were really poor when we were when we were first married, because Ted said, if you're going to get married that young, you're out of the nest. And I went, oh, there went the checkbook. And so, but it was okay because I was so in love. And we worked very hard. We ended up buying one of my dad's businesses and did very well. The children were starting to get older, and when they were real young, my husband brought home a bottle of wine, red wine. That was my ticket. That was everything I needed. It made me feel exactly like I wanted to feel, and I loved it. We'd just drink on weekends, and then as the kids started getting older, it was like 9 o'clock, he'd have a drink at 9 o'clock, and once everything was done, because I earned it, of course, I thought, and then it was three nights a week, then four nights a week, and then as it progressed, I was finding excuses to drink. I was starting to hide it. I would mark, I knew how much wine I could drink, and I'd mark, of course, I didn't drink regular bottles, they were the gallons, and Hardy Burgundy was my favorite, screwed up, and I would mark on the bottle because I knew how much I could drink and not have the shakes or be hungover. So I would do that, but I'd always drink over the line. So what I do to torture myself is I fill it back up with water to the line. So the next day, I had to drink shit. So that was my punishment for drinking over my line. And that's how my drinking was. Sneaky, conniving. When I was 30, I know this is AA, but I discovered the white powder. Which I was not a good drinker. I couldn't drink that much at a time, but then I could. And that's where the trouble began. I could not have a drink without having something else, and vice versa. And then I started being very reckless. I remember going to the Kalinga Swinty Championships and with the motorhome and running in the bathroom to have wine. I mean, I look back at the stuff, I'm going like, what was I thinking? And I got out of control. I got out of control. I started making excuses. I started doing just terrible things. And finally my husband said, I'm done. You're going to be just like your mother. And that was the most hurtful thing he ever said to me. Because I did not want to be my mom. She died when I was 21 of cirrhosis, and she was brain gone, wet brain. And so that, you would think, that would have stopped me. Her stomach was extended. I remember that when she would go into comas, and never dawned on me what was going on with me. I got a divorce. I sat at home and drank for 4 months, and my daughter, she was in high school at the time, and said, you need to get out of here. I'm tired of seeing you cry and do this. And I went to a bar. Great place to go. And I wasn't a bar drinker because I didn't want the family to know, like they didn't already know. But I thought I was being real tricky. And I met a bouncer at the bar, of course, and he had what I wanted, and ended up with him for 2 years. It was nothing but a mess. It was a very abusive relationship. I finally got out of that. I was hiding. I ended up in, I had two beautiful kids, three businesses, a beautiful 3-acre home, everything you'd ever want. And where I ended up was a one-bedroom, little tiny apartment down on Santa Fe, down here, with my drapes drawn and drinking my gallon of my wine until I would pass out. That's where I ended up. And So one of my friends said, oh, I've got this guy. I think you should go out with him. And I said, sure. And so he called me and I said, well, I live in, you may not, don't judge me by where I live. You might bring a 9mm though. And it was your season. And he shows up in a Jaguar, which I go, cha-ching. And I get in the car and there's a 9mm. I was just kidding. So that didn't last very long. I found out when I got a phone call from his wife that it probably wasn't a good relationship to be in. And that night I got really drunk, and I remembered I had a friend that was a bartender at the Santa Fe station. So I went really drunk, and I went down there, and there was this older gentleman in there, and he looked at me like, oh boy. He said, you know, I think you, he said, honey, you look like you're worth saving. And he said, let me buy you dinner. Well, I ended up with that guy. He was 25 years older than me for 2.5 years. He was wonderful to me. He told me that he was a professional drinker. And my problem was that I drank that red shit. And I needed to drink whiskey or white wine. And I go, he goes, the red wine has the stuff at the bottom, he said. And that's what's wrong with you. So I couldn't drink whiskey, couldn't drink anything brown because it smelled like my mom and my hairs would just stand up. So I drank white wine. He was killed in a car accident, hit by a semi head on. And at that point, I was done. I said, you know what, God hates me. I have ruined everything. My family hates me. Everybody hates me. I'm drunk. You know, I'm just done. And at work, they could smell. I was saturated every day with wine, and they could smell it. I remembered somebody saying, I couldn't lose my job. That's all I had left. And somebody said they couldn't smell vodka. So I thought, well, I'll just drink vodka. And that didn't work out so well. I drank vodka for 4 months. He was killed in January 1997. And by May 6th of 1997, they had taken me. I'd finally called my sister. My stomach was completely extended. I looked 11 months pregnant. I was probably 80 pounds with 50 pounds worth of stomach. I had ascites. I don't know if a lot of you know what it is. It's a killer, and it's caused by alcohol. And what happens is your organs shut down. I don't know all the real terms. I just had to live through it. And everything starts oozing. You have liquid that builds up all in the cavity of your stomach. And it doesn't go away. They have to take it out with needles. And they rushed me in to the doctors. They immediately stuck needles. My stomach was so bad, you could almost see through it. It was transparent. And they started taking the liquid out with needles and big bottles, and they could only do so much at a time because it would have killed me. They rushed me to Fresno. I went into a detox for 10 days. I don't remember it. They had me out for the first few days. They gave me, at that point, they didn't think I'd make it even out of the 10 days. They let the kids come in and say goodbye. And that was the hardest thing ever, because I thought I was so ready to die until I looked at my children's faces. The tears, you know, it's just like, what have you done? What have you done? And I decided, I got out, they let me out of there, and my sister said, what can I do? And she said, do you want to quit drinking? And I said, yes. And so she sent me to a rehab. I was there for 45 days. I was in and out of the hospital. They had to take liquid out of me like every 3 or 4 days. I do have a picture, if anybody wants to see it, what an 80-pound with a 50-pound stomach looks like. I was completely malnourished. I was dehydrated, and my organs were all shutting down. It's not a very pretty sight. When I was in that rehab, they had a specialist just happened to have been coming through Fresno, a liver doctor, and he came to visit me and looked at my numbers, and he said, "I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do." He said, "Maybe 3 months. That's the most. So make good use of your time." And I remember I was like, "It's over." You know, and it was okay. That's almost scary to me now. It was okay. And then I remember my daughter was 7 months pregnant and with my first grandchild. And I go, "Oh my God." And so I made a deal with God that if you will just let me live until September, when the baby's going to be born, I'll do whatever. Whatever it takes, anything. And so I did. I read every book. I did everything they told me to do. They carried me to most of the meetings because I was unable to walk very long and couldn't sit. And I had a couple of big guys I happened to have been in rehab with and carried me around. I made it out of rehab. I made it home. And the minute I got home, I had some dear friends who picked me up, took me to my first meeting. I was on special diets. I went for 7 months and had my stomach drained with needles. Not fun. I did that, and I stayed sober, and everything, the baby was born, everything was wonderful, and I got healthy, for kind of, as much as you can for as bad a shape as I was in. And I stayed sober. I got a sponsor right away, and she looked at me, and she goes, "Well, we'll just kind of go the steps pretty light because you're not going to be around anyway." So anyway, we did. She goes, "Well, what do you think about this?" And I kind of just blew through them. And I got healthier. And then after 7 months, I could start eating like real food and stuff like that. I remember at 18 months sober, it had started a little bit before that. I was so involved in AA. I loved it. I had gotten honest with myself. I had, for the first time ever, I lived in a fantasy world. I was whatever you wanted me to be all the time. I mean, I had one closet that was cowboy stuff, and the other closet was all hippie stuff. And then another closet of random things. You know, it depends on who I was going to be with that day. And so I lived in fantasy world. I believed in everything AA had to offer me. And I believed everything every one of you said was God's honest truth. And I found out that not everybody is honest. And I was shocked. I thought everybody's just like me, and they need to be as honest as they can so they can stay sober. And it really bummed me out. I mean, I really got I got real discouraged. And then I was making cookies one night, and I was 18 months sober. I remember being pissed off because there's no 18 month chip. That really made me mad. And I thought they should make one just for me, because I was alive. So anyway, I make these Santa Claus cookies every year, always have. Even when I was drunk, I was making them. And there's a little bit of vanilla extract left in one of the bottles. And I knew nothing about vanilla. And I drank it. And all of a sudden, it burned going down. And it set something off in me. I didn't know what it was at the time, but I was like, "Oh." And I thought, "Wow, that was weird. I better stay away from that." And so then like a week or two later, I got mad at somebody at work or something. And I go, I'll go get some more of that vanilla. So I did. And not knowing, well, then I think I figured it out when I got it, that it is 45% alcohol. And my head, this is how powerful your head is, that it told me that if I drank again, I would die. I mean, that was a given. And all I'd been through, and I found that I could drink this vanilla, and it, I got that feeling, you know, like, but I wasn't drinking. And then, I mean, it started out just a little. I was buying 8-ounce bottles, and it was like a half of one, and that was cool. And then I was doing a little bit more, and a little bit more, and then on weekends, I'd go to the whole bottle. And it started bad. It was like $6.90 a bottle. I would only drink McCormick's, by the way. It's the best. And it was like $6 a bottle. By the time I ended up, it was almost $15 a bottle. And I was drinking 1 to 2 a day. And I had no money. I couldn't pay my rent. Every bit of my money was going to the vanilla. It was, I filed bankruptcy, and I couldn't very well say, well, because I'm buying vanilla. I could tell you stories about being sneaky in the stores, going to different stores just like we do with booze. And there was, this one kid says to me, he looked at the bottles, a young checker, and he goes, wow, look at all the alcohol in here. And I go, shut up. And I looked around in the store just knowing somebody from AA is in that store. You know, I'm like, I'm so busted. And then one day, I would have them ask, do you own a bakery? And because I could line them up, you know, hundreds of dollars at a time. I got all kinds of, and one guy said, you know, they use that for perfume. And I went, oh, shit, I smell it. And I was at the store one day, and my dearest friend, Carl, a lot of you may know him if you've been around for a while. His wife happened to be behind me at the store, and I had she was a little thrifty. So you know, a good alcoholic can lie on a drop of a hat, and I didn't fancy myself a liar, but boy, you know, when you need to do it, it comes through. And I had the counter lined up, and here's Shirley going, looking at all my vanilla. Well, I knew how tight she was, and so my first thought was, sale, you know, look at all this. I said, you know, Shirley, it's going to go up $4 a bottle in a couple of months, so I decided to stock up. And she goes, oh, yeah. Well, I thought if that was good enough that she wasn't going to go and tell Carl. And Carl never said a word to me. I thought I'd gotten away with it. And so Carl, where I work, Carl happened to have been a member, and I ditched him because of the guilt. And I knew he could see in my face that I was drinking. I knew that he knew. And, you know, the guilt is just horrible to have to live with. I finally, run that time, I'll make a long story short. I finally, one night, or morning, I don't even remember, I woke up, or came to, with my face in a trash can, full of vomit and cigarette butts. Not attractive. And, I go, I'm done. I am done. And I knew that there was a speaker meeting at 264. So I said, I'm done. I've got to go back. I was humiliated. I the pride thing. I didn't want to crawl back and say I'm a loser. I mean, that's what I thought I was doing. And I found that meeting, and I went. And quick story, when I first got there, nobody was there. And I thought God was saying, it's not your time yet. I was too early, and nobody was there yet. So I thought, you know, well, he doesn't want me to go back yet. And I get in my car, and I leave, and I go, no, he does want you to come back. So I went to the Alano, found out what time the meeting really was, went back, all the people were there, and they welcomed me back. And that was July 29th of 03. And I have never been happier. I have since done the steps twice with a good sponsor that knew I wasn't going to die, hopefully this time. And I love this program. I work very, very hard at it. Personally, it's changed my life. It's changed everything about me. I still don't have a lot of self-confidence. You wouldn't believe that, but I don't. I'm working on that. I do a lot of things. I have my family's respect back, which is, I mean, money can't buy that. My children, my grandchildren have never seen me drunk. They don't even know that I'm an alcoholic. The older ones do. They know the story, but they've never seen me drunk. And I never, ever want them ever to see me like I was. I was bitter. I was lonely. And it was everybody else's fault. I had nothing to do with it. I blamed all the drugs for my trouble. And I quit that in 1994 and never picked up another one because I knew that's what it was, but it was the alcohol. Well, that helped too, but the trouble didn't stop when I stopped that. It was the drunk. I mean, I was a drunk. And, today I do H&I. I go to the jails. I treasure a meeting. I stay close. Even after 10 and a half years, it's my life, and I stay close. I probably should do more meetings, and so I'll go back and forth. But AA is never far away. I do my meditation every morning. And it keeps me sane. It keeps me, I use the steps every single day dealing with the public, which I do, because they all need a program. They really do. They really do. I always want to say, here's my book. You want to read it. But AA is my life, and I owe it everything. I shouldn't be here today. And I am. And before I came in today, I just said a prayer that maybe something I say can maybe help just one person. That's all that maybe I'm here for. God saved me for some reason, and I think it's for Alcoholics Anonymous. And there's going to be one person one day that's going to have my story, probably not the vanilla, but it's going to go, I'm just like you, and that's why I'm here tonight. And thank you very much. Does anybody have any questions?
Hi, Mandy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
18 months. 18 months, and then it started slowly. I didn't get into about 2002 is when I was drinking 2 bottles a day. 2001, 2002. Yeah, it took a while to get into that, but it just like anything else, you just pick it up once, and that's all it took for me. When I look back at that one feeling. That burning set it off in here. I didn't know that. I was totally out of control. I mean, I had no idea that that's what was going to happen. You know, I thought I was good. Who in the world would ever drink again if you'd been through what I'd been? I mean, that's how it's cunning and baffling, and that's how it worked for me. So I can't take a chance. Yes. Absolutely. I've gotten over that too. I thought that I'll just make one at home.
How do you find your balance in your recovery?
My balance? Well, I think that I am around a lot of people that drink, and not a lot, but I have family members that still drink, and I go to functions where they have alcohol, and I have to. That's just part of what I have to do. What I do is, it's funny, I find that if anyone knows, which I don't have a problem telling anybody I'm an alcoholic, you'll find people that are drinking at functions that come up and ask me, so how did you know that your liver was bad? You know, I get a lot of questions, and I feel like saying, you wouldn't be asking if you didn't think you were had a problem. You know, and I try to share that when I am around family members and things like that. When they have too much to drink, I excuse myself because it's not worth me getting mad because they get stupid. And I go, oh my God, that was me. But it's hard for me because I don't want to get mad at them. They don't know better. So anyway, that's what I do. Gotta go. Everybody goes, why do you leave so early? Because you're drunk. You're welcome. Yes.
I'm Bruce, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Bruce, sir.
What does H and I do for you?
Oh, H and I for me, especially going to the jails, is, you know, the thing that I love the most is a lot of people I see go, you don't look like an alcoholic. And I go, oh, we come in all size and shapes, you know. It has no boundaries. I really like talking to the girls. I like to, you know, a lot of times they look at me and they'll go, oh, yeah, like she knows what we're about. And I go, oh, honey, let me tell you. And so I whip on like a few of my really horror stories that I can't tell here. And they go, oh, you do know. So, and hopefully I try when I go in there is I try to have my hair combed and look presentable to try to give them hope that I was in the gutter. I mean in the gutter. And you can overcome that. It takes some time, but yeah, you can overcome any of that. I mean, I had no money, I had no nothing, and I was a mess, and it can happen. It can happen with this program and the steps. I mean, that's learning to deal with people and working the steps on people it saved me a lot. Thanks. Dan? Thank you very much.